Getting a book published is harder than ever. Making money as a publisher is harder than ever. And it's easier than ever to self-publish. This hour, publishing in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The University of Iowa Press publishes about 45 books a year. I'll talk with director Jim McCoy. Ice Cube Press, based in North Liberty, is an even smaller shop. Ice Cube publishes 5 or 6 books a year. Steve Semkin, the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press, will be here. And Mike Wellman has self-published 3 books. I'll talk with him about his experience. We also want to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The writer's fantasy of getting discovered, being published, publishing a wildly successful first book, getting a big fat advance for a second book, it's becoming even more fantastical with each passing year. Today, we're going to talk about the reality of publishing in Iowa. And this hour, we also want to hear your publishing stories and your questions as well. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me in the studio to start us off, we have 2 publishers. Jim McCoy is here. He is director of the University of Iowa Press. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Thank
you
so
Halloween.
Much. Oh, thank you. So happy to have you here today. And Steve Semkin is also here. He's the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press based in North Liberty. Hello, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And Jim, let's start with you. University of Iowa Press has been around for quite some time. Can you give us a little bit of a history of the press?
Sure. It's been around since 1967, I believe. All university presses are put on this earth to disseminate scholarship. But over the years, we've kind of evolved our mission to also serve the greater community of Iowa. And through that, we've really developed a corpus of work about the nature and the history and the culture of this great state and the greater Midwest. All of our books, well, not all of them, but most of them are peer-reviewed. That's kind of standard for a university press charter. That means we have experts reading our books and verifying the data in them and making corrections as they go along. So it's typically a longer publishing process than the normal trade aspect. But we have both the scholarly side and a trade, what we call a trade side of books you would find quite easily in Prairie Lights or Iowa Book and Supply or Amazon, as well as our more scholarly work, which might just appeal to a very small segment of any academic community.
About how many books do you publish every year?
We publish 45 books a year with a staff of 7 people, which is one of the highest per capita outputs in the university press world.
I can imagine that keeps you very busy.
Yes.
And how many of each book do you actually publish when you publish a new book or a reissue?
That varies. And in fact, right now, I tend not to think in those terms. Digital technology makes that happen. Publishing has always been a business of scale. And that is changing because we have digital technology where we can essentially print what we need. And so what we've done is tighten print runs quite a bit to a standard trade book. We might only print 800 to 1,200 copies these days. But that doesn't mean the expectation isn't greater. It just means the reality is we know that's what we will sell, where we used to have to speculate quite a bit.
Right.
And we don't have to do that anymore. And it's actually a godsend, as Steve would agree, because it really helps you tighten up the margin and less cash out the door involved in inventory and printing costs.
Well, and does that mean that we're going to hear less and less about books being out of print?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for university press, that's always been part of our mission is to keep books in print as long as we can, and both with digital printing technology but also digital archiving for ebooks, that really makes it possible for us. I don't think I've put a book out of print. I probably put a a handful of books out of print since I've been in Iowa. And even going back to my previous stop, we really stopped doing that around 2000, 2001, knowing that even if the sales weren't there to sustain a normal print run, that there would be other opportunities such as digital distribution and licensing that would really make it not a smart move to put a book out of print.
All right. And when you put a book out of print, what does that mean about your relationship with the author? I mean, what obviously it's not just about having the books.
Right. Well, there's a distinction between putting something out of print and reverting rights. But typically we do it with consultation with the author. Again, we don't do it often. I mean, but we've had situations, and normally it's very amicable. Good luck with this, and we can even help point you towards other printers. It's more common that we're bringing books back into print. We have an active reprint program, and in fact, we just started a program that I'm trying to get the word out with. We call Faculty Connections, where we're looking for faculty that may have had peer-reviewed work in the humanities that has fallen out of print over the years, and they like to see it back into print. And we think that's a service we could provide to faculty. So we're looking to do that with a few books a year. We're republishing this month our first book in that series by a former president of the U of I, Charles Bowen, who wrote a book on social responsibilities of businessmen. And he wrote it in the 1950s, so you think it's quite antiquated, but there's a whole school that's developed around this. And particularly since 2009, this book has suddenly gotten tons of citations and scholarly articles written about it. So it seemed the time was ripe to bring it back into print.
Well, we'll talk more about the nitty-gritty of your process and other things about the University of Iowa Press. I want to bring Steve Simkin into the conversation now. And, Jim, you refer to the University of Iowa Press as a small press. Now, we're going to go even smaller. As I mentioned, Steve Simkin is the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press. It's based in North Liberty. He's also the author of a number of books, including Pick Up Stick City, Restoration Fiction. So, Steve, Ice Cube Press, you founded this about 20 years ago?
Yep. I know when people refer to the University of Iowa as a small press, and I think to myself, oh, man, that place is huge. So I have to come up with another word, right, like super microscopic press for myself, almost invisible.
Right. So tell us the origin story. Right. How did this get started?
Oh, you know, I guess I just had a track record of trying things and always wanting to be a writer. And just a series of jobs, but yet somehow in the back of my mind, I always envisioned that someday I wanted to, when I grew up, I wanted to be part of writing. And in some ways, I was a little impatient, but in other ways, I just never quit thinking about writing. And so I always remember I was a customer service rep at a job, and there was a new bookstore on the corner, and I started walking down there, and it just dawned on me, like, okay, I just need to get back to this love of books. And then I don't know why I was attracted to designing things, because I hadn't been before, but I just decided that I was going to reinvent myself as a writer. And then I thought, I'm not going to go to school and get an MFA or anything. So I just decided to do a newsletter. And then I started sharing this newsletter with writers that I really admired. And so I thought, well, Gary Snyder doesn't know me, but if I'm on the right track, I'll send him a piece of what I've written. And I really think that's a great way to start anything now when I think about being a writer, is that because I often say writers don't really – you're not really a writer unless you're sharing it with other people. And so I would send – a piece of my writing in this newsletter to Gary Snyder, and he's like, oh, I really like this, and he sent me my subscription fee. And then I was inspired by Barry Lopez, and I mailed him something, and I got a letter from him. I thought, okay, I think I'm on the right track. And so that's kind of how it started. If I knew I would still be in business, I would have, after 20 years, I honestly didn't think that it was going to work, because I have a track record of just sort of, this is a great idea, I'm going to see what happens. And I just decided I would see this one through. And so now everyone's like, why is it the Ice Cube Press? And it's not like a remarkable story behind it. I was just sitting there, and I had written a story about this man who was wandering across the desert, and he actually caught up with a mirage, and then he went inside it. And then inside there was the Ice Cube Cafe. And that happened to be the same day I decided I was going to start a press. So I was like, hey, Ice Cube Press, that's a cool thing. But since then, everyone's like, oh, I know why you called it the Ice Cube Press. It's because water freezes and then it reforms into a new type of a, you know, a new form. And I was like, that's exactly why I did it. or when people deliver the books, I've had lots of drivers, they'll come up and go, you know, there's a rapper called Ice Cube. I'm like, yeah, I know. I get a lot of rap songs queries sent to me, too. So that's kind of how it got started.
All right. And let's talk about what it is today, because you are actually now a full-time publisher. It took many years for this to become something that you could actually support yourself doing. You put out, what, 4 to 5 books a year?
Like 5 or 6, but 45. I was doing the math. I'm like, 45 divided by 7? Wait. Each one of them is doing more than me.
I'm really slacking. More next year.
But no, that's all I can handle by a mile. Because I've always enjoyed figuring everything out, and so I start. So I also enjoy creating the covers, and I work really closely with the authors. But it was definitely not when you hear people say, "Don't get rid of your day job." Well, I believed that because I could see, you know, my first book was just one book. I mean, and that was my book. I self-published the first book. And so I was, in a lot of ways, that was good for everyone that's come after me, because I definitely learned a lot about what to do on the first 2 or 3 books. And when you hear the phrase, like, everything you've done before all goes together somehow, it definitely has all worked out, because I was training people on sales, and I'm sure we'll get into that later. But
absolutely. So just in a nutshell, before we get to the break, tell us about the focus of Ice Cube Press today.
Today is entirely how we can better live, how we can better understand how to best live here in the Midwest. And so it's anything from fiction to biography, poetry. It's not just nonfiction and fiction, but it's everything put together.
All right. And
whatever words can do.
And number of anthologies as well. You bring together writers in some cases.
Right.
As well.
We sort of pick a theme sometimes. I used to do a lot of annual readings with Arts Iowa City and Humanities Iowa when we go on the road.
All right. Well, we will continue our conversation about publishing in Iowa in just a moment. With me, Steve Semkin. He is the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press, based in North Liberty. And also Jim McCoy is here. He's the director of the University of Iowa Press. And in a moment, we'll also be joined by Michael Wellman, an author who lives in Des Moines, and he's chosen to self-publish his 3 books. We'd also like to hear from you with your publishing stories and your questions. You can call us at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about publishing in Iowa. It's a field that has changed a lot in the last 10 or 20 years. Here with me today is Jim McCoy. He's director of University of Iowa Press. Also, Steve Semkin is the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press, which is based in North Liberty, a very small press. And now Michael Wellman is with us. He lives in Des Moines, and he has self-published 3 books, 2 memoirs, and his most recent book is a novel called Versus the Demons. He's also a staff writer for the Des Moines School District. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Let's go back to the beginning of the story for you. Why did you decide that you wanted to self-publish a book?
Okay. Listening to Steve's story before the break, I was kind of nodding with familiarity because in some ways, like him, when I was growing up, the one kind of constant interest that I had was in writing. I wrote for my school papers all the way up through writing for the Daily Iowan when I was in Iowa City in my college days. For various reasons, I got out of college and my life sort of just haphazardly detoured into the hospitality business. I got into the bar and restaurant business almost by happenstance. It kind of dovetailed, frankly, with my lifestyle at that stage of my life. And I guess it's about 7 years ago now, I had become the owner of a local pub when I was single and in my late 20s. 7 or so years ago, I was in my 50s and I had 3 kids, and I was not quite as nocturnal as I had once been, and I needed to get out of that business. And so I sold my way out of that business, and that opened a window of opportunity for me to, sort of pursue a long-held fantasy. You were talking about fantasies in your intro. I had the luxury of, my wife's a school teacher, and so I kind of plotted out the memoir I wanted to write from the neighborhood where I grew up here in Des Moines. I disciplined myself. I thought when Chris and the kids go back to school in the fall, I will try and at least spend the morning of each day, Monday through Friday, working on a manuscript for this memoir. And if I do that over the course of the academic calendar, I reasoned I would have at least enough output to see if I had anything there. And in the midst of that process, I was sending out queries as I wrote to agents and publishing houses, and bracing for what every aspiring writer is told to expect, which is rejection. And I was getting that. And somewhere in the midst of the manuscript, I think a piece of junk email came my way that was from a publishing house, a self-publishing house. I had only a vague awareness of that industry. The term that I had always heard was vanity press. And I nosed around, did a little bit of follow-up research, and decided that it was an industry that was then really burgeoning, and it absolutely has exploded since that time. I think its self-published books have tripled in about in the time that I've been putting out my books. But anyway, I learned enough about it to know that it was a viable option for me if the traditional route didn't work out. And so I kind of made up my mind at that point that when I thought I was finished with the book and had polished it as best I could, and if I thought that it deserved to be at least presented to a potential audience, that I would, my plan B would be self-publishing. And that's what happened.
And in self-publishing, if you don't mind me asking, do you remember how much money you spent on getting that first book published?
I think I spent roughly $1,000 to get the first book published, and I could have spent much more. The publisher that I chose, I would say they've published all three of my books, and I would say that they have done everything that was promised to me and everything that I guess that I bought. But there is, as people may or may not be able to imagine, once you affiliate, there's a constant drumbeat of pressure on you to add on bells and whistles that, especially early on, I had no way of knowing if they would be worth the money they would have cost or not. But it was kind of a moot point because I didn't really have the money that they would have cost. I don't have a relationship with a publisher or an editor that amounts to somebody who I know believes in my work and thinks it's good. On the other hand, the self-publishing industry, its explosion has made it possible for a long-held dream of mine to be realized, and so in that sense, I appreciate everything that my publisher has done for me. You get really more control than, frankly, I bargained for. I never imagined myself as a promoter or a marketer or a book cover designer, those kinds of things. But they're also part of the. I just wanted to write. And as I quickly found out when my first book came out, I started hearing from lots of quarters the old thing about congratulations on getting your book published. That's like 10% of the whole deal, and now comes the other 90%, which is promo and marketing, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and, you know, you have gone on to do two more books self-published.
Yes.
So you must have figured that out to a degree. What do you think your most successful ploy or method for selling your books is?
I'm not sure. I think when the first book, Far From the Trees, which is a memoir, when it was ready and released, I arranged an event at Beaverdale Books, which is a local independent bookstore here in Des Moines that does a lot of that sort of thing for local authors. I had no idea, obviously, what to expect, but I think it's fair to say that what happened the night of that release event exceeded whatever my expectations would have been. More people came than I would have expected. And in the immediate aftermath of that book's release, there was a brief and very localized, really sensation, I think you could say, about it that that just stunned me. There was a waiting list at Beaverdale Books for people to order the book, and I think I lucked into some real word of mouth because it was a memoir really that spoke for kind of my whole generation, those of us baby boomers that grew up in the sensational 60s. Of course, I wanted to think that all of this interest in the book was strictly because I had written it, and what I've figured out since is it had more to do with the word of mouth that was spreading about what it dealt with and the places, the people, places, and things that were part of the book. I'm very lucky in retrospect that the first of my three books did as well as it did by the admittedly low standards of self-publishing because if it hadn't, I mean, I drew a lot of encouragement from that experience, and I was hooked, I guess you could say, and I thought I didn't ever have any delusions of, you know, becoming a best-selling author and fame and any of that sort of thing. There are many trappings that come with that that I know I would not be interested in or even up to. But I think I resisted writing for a long time because my worst-case scenario, my fear was that what if I put something out there and it flops and people will, you know, in effect laugh at me behind my back and I'll somehow be a failure. But I mean, ultimately what's happened is I wanted at the end of my personal story, I did not want to have the regret of never having even taken a shot at what I had long most wanted to do.
But it is a very, very vulnerable act,
yes,
to, especially to self-publish, although
yep.
I'm sure that Steve and Jim would echo that, that it's a pretty vulnerable act to even submit something to a publisher and then to go through the whole process of getting it published. And so let me ask you, Michael, did you have an editor? Did you hire somebody to edit your book?
I did not hire an editor. And I know this is kind of the literary equivalent of the old axiom about somebody who represents themselves in court has a fool for a client. I think in writing terms, an author who tries to whatever extent to edit his own work is it's kind of the same situation. I've done the best I could with all my books to polish them and go through them repeatedly before I release them. And I also have a limited circle of people who I think the downside is I can't kid myself that they're completely objective because in one way or another, they have known me previously. On the other hand, they're people who I know have copy editing skills, are voracious readers, and those sorts of things that I think give them a little bit of a, you know, frankly, when I was talking earlier about the bell and whistle add-ons to the costs that I've incurred publishing, editing is one of the most costly. I know that I need an editor, and I would trust anybody that had the competence to do it to do just raw typo sort of copy editing. When you get into matters of style and that sort of thing, frankly, I long to have a relationship with somebody whose opinion I would trust enough to take their recommendations about, you know, substantial revisions of my work. As we speak, I don't feel like I have that relationship with anyone.
Steve, you're a one-man shop. Do you do the editing of all the books that come through?
Well, it's not really that. It's not totally that easy. I mean,
I don't think that sounds easy. But
Yeah, I'm going to start out reading the books, and I'm going to work with the author to do that. But I definitely have people that I have read all the books that are good, that edit the books. And then anytime I work with someone, it's not just – I mean, there's such a relationship with me and my authors that I finally choose that, I mean, I'm mining them for what they can do for their own book. And so – I did a book for a lady here in Iowa City, and it turns out her daughter was an expert at foreign translation and was really competent in English. And so I was like, well, you know, you should have her read your book also. And so we're sort of gathering everyone around her. And if I can't find someone to do that, then I'll easily have someone else edit the book. And because, I mean, the first thing you do – I feel like one of the worst things you can do is have that book come out because you don't get a second chance to make it look good. And so if it comes out and it's just like sending a query to a publisher. I mean, sure, you might make a mistake when you ask me to publish your book, but if you're telling me you pay close attention to detail and then there's a typo in the first sentence of your query letter, then I'm less likely to take that seriously. And it's exactly the same when I read a book. I can tell, you know, books I've read, if I see a lot of mistakes in it, then I slowly, you know, the first couple, you're like, I bet the author knows something I don't know. And they're really smart. And so I should probably figure out that. But after four or five, you're like, wait a second. Right. I think that's just a mistake.
Well, tell me about the editing process at University of Iowa Press, Jim.
Sure. We have a couple layers. One would be the most basic level, which is our acquisitions editors. These are the people who go out and find the books. We've designated areas that we feel it's worthwhile to publish in, and it's really their mission to go out and procure the books, work with authors, see what works, see what doesn't. And once they get to a certain level of confidence with that manuscript, we want to bring it on board or contract for it. Then they do what we call developmental editing, which is to work with the author to bring out the strengths and suppress the weaknesses of the book. And that's also where the peer review process comes in. And typically, because of that process, we go through a couple revisions that can be pretty substantial. So the original work we get in becomes much different by the time we have a final manuscript. And then we go into the copy editing stage, which Steve is talking about. And we have a managing editor who handles all that and has a team of freelancers. And they work back and forth with the author on matters of style and grammar and formatting and things like that.
How long would you say it takes between the time that you accept a submission or select something that you're going to publish to the time when it actually gets printed?
That's tough to say. I mean, working backwards, once we have a final manuscript to the time we publish it, it's typically 8 to 9 months. So before that, you have all that developmental time, and it can be years. There are scholarly projects, not with this press, but I know other university presses that have been in the works for 30, 40 years. Typically, I'd say it's about a 2-year process. As we get in a proposal, which is typically the first level we see, we get a proposal and some sample chapters and some outlines, and we go through this process that we're discussing. And typically, it takes a couple of years.
Can I just add one quick thing? No, I love because Jim said we work backwards. I say that to authors all the time. If this is going to be a release date, then we're going to work backwards from that. And it definitely takes – authors are always surprised, I think, when it turns out it's going to take at least a year minimum to get this thing going.
Right. Well, let's get to the phones. We're going to take a break in just a couple of minutes, but let's at least get one caller in before we do. Robert is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I've got a book that for 20 years I've wanted it to be reprinted. It was done in the 1950s. It was done by a university press here in Iowa that I think is now defunct, a small university. The author is deceased, and I just don't even know where to begin to try to get this reprinted. I'm afraid, you know, copyright laws and things like that. Is there any advice they can give us?
Well, Jim, I'm sure you you hear about books like this
all
the time.
You know, first of all, copyright is where you have to start. You need to find out what the permissions basis is. And I would recommend you, I don't have the URL off the top of my head, but Stanford University Libraries hosts a data site that has essentially you can find the copyright status, particularly if it was renewed at some point, and that can be very useful. And obviously, the U.S. Copyright Office is another resource. But we find that Stanford site really easy to use and a good resource. And then from there, you just have to the most valuable advice I can give an author is always look at what a publisher publishes. I mean, that's your starting point. When people send out blanket submissions and want a publisher to publish within something that they have no interest in, and it's obvious from their publishing program, it's a waste of time for everybody. So, you know, discern what the book is and then look around. And you don't need to feel that you have to keep it local just because it might have been done by a local author. You can look around to a variety of publishers and find out who's publishing in that field.
All right. We are talking about publishing in Iowa today. Robert, thank you so much for your call, and we'll get back to the phones when we get back in just a couple of minutes. With me, Jim McCoy, director of University of Iowa Press, Steve Semkin, owner and operator of Ice Cube Press in North Liberty, and Michael Wellman, who has self-published 3 books. His most recent is a novel called Versus the Demons. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about publishing in Iowa. Jim McCoy is director of University of Iowa Press. He's here with us today. Steve Semkin is owner and operator of Ice Cube Press, a very small press based in North Liberty. And Michael Wellman is here. He lives in Des Moines and has self-published 3 books. His most recent is a novel called Versus the Demons. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Judy's on the line next from Oxford. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I too have self-published. I write nonfiction books about racehorses. And I never wanted to be a writer, but I've drawn horses all my life. And when I was young, I was really, well, I still am, horse crazy, and I loved these nonfiction books by C.W. Anderson. They were printed in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and, of course, they've been out of print for decades. And so there's nothing like that out there now. So I thought, well, I guess I should do this. So I finally got a book about ready, and I wrote to publishers, and I wrote to agents, and the publishers were fairly polite, but they didn't really sell my kind of book, and the agents were much less polite and were almost insulted that I would even ask. So I was so depressed, I didn't do anything for 3 years, and then I decided, hey, you just got to do everything yourself. So I did. I have Handy Horse Press, and I got my first book printed at Pella Press. It cost me $22,000 for 1,500 copies. And then they also did my second book. The first book was about Triple Crown winners and the third book about race mares. And I didn't know how to market them. Race tracks were interested, but since the recession, all of the race tracks in Maryland and California have been in bankruptcy court. And the race tracks in New York had bought 25 of my books and said they sold well. But the gift shops and the racetracks have shut down now, and people apparently don't buy books much. They want sweatshirts and baseball caps,
well,
that kind of thing.
So Judy, your question is about marketing, and that's a very daunting task. I mean, Mike, when you first self-published your books, had you thought through the process of, hey, I'll get this published, and then I have to sell it?
I don't know if I could say I had thought it through. When I was talking to your producer the other day, making arrangements for this program, I told her my romantic notion about it. The process has always been that I imagine when I write something and put it out there, it's like dropping a message into a bottle and tossing it in the stream, and it will find its way, you know, where it's meant to go and needs to go. I had no idea really how crowded the stream was with bottles. But I, you know, this month, Charity, this is the last day of October, I had what amounts to kind of a publicity blitzkrieg for me. In the span of about 1 week this month, I got to speak to some creative writing classes at a West Des Moines high school, a local chapter of the Rotary Club, and then I went to the Slater, Iowa Public Library because it seemed like a good spot there. There's an element of my book, Versus the Demons, that touches on the Slater Nighthawks semi-pro baseball team. So, it's a lot of what's happened was not premeditated on my part. I'm several years into this now in three books, and most of what little I think I know about it, I've learned, you know, during that time. I did not know it when for me, the big hurdle to clear was to discipline myself to sit down and produce and write.
Now, even with, and I'll call University of Iowa Press a larger publisher in this case, I mean, even writers who publish with a larger publisher, often from the stories that I've been told, the onus still falls on the author to do a lot of the selling and a lot of the outreach.
Increasingly. I don't know about the selling, as I would define selling.
Right, right.
But in terms of marketing, an author who works with a publisher and participates in their self-promotion as their own best friend. It's proven again and again. Author who is willing to participate in social media, get out there and read, and make themselves available. The chances of their book succeeding is infinitely better. And the reality is, when just this season we have we're publishing 24 books, and about 17 or 18 of those are trade in some sense, which means that we're approaching national media and doing social media campaigns that are very labor intensive when you're talking about working with each individual author and how to tailor a social media campaign to their book. Those things are really labor intensive. And
how many people at University of Iowa?
Basically
Press?
One and a half. I'm I come out of marketing, and Allison Means is our marketing director, and she does the bulk of it, and I fill in where needed. So across 17 books, when you have one person handling the media, and she does a terrific job, we get reviews in New York Times, New York Review of Books, Wall Street Journal, LA Times. We've got an author who will be on River to River in the next hour.
Right.
Readings all through the country. We have a book right now that's going crazy on social media on the TV series Supernatural. And the authors are embedded in that world and really know how to work it. But it takes a ton of time. And if the authors aren't willing to put the time in, there's only so much we can do. Really, our whole marketing plan is predicated on reviews. We don't have money to advertise. And Michael put it really well. The stream is so crowded. There are hundreds of thousands of books published every year. Just try to get...
And fewer books are being sold and read, I believe.
I believe that's true.
Right,
I will tell you, it is incredibly tough to sell a book in
this
day and age.
There are more authors and fewer readers.
Right.
And the idea that an author could actually make a living as an author, I mean, that strikes me as getting to be more and more and more of a pipe dream.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah, sure, Mike.
Well, I've made a profit, it's fair to say, on each of my books, but not a living. On the other hand, you know, I mentioned earlier that I've kind of segued from a quote-unquote career in the bar and restaurant business into a stage of my life where, whether it's through selling and marketing the books I've written or freelancing for the Des Moines Register or my day job, the proverbial day job, I work as a staff writer now in the Community Relations Office for the Des Moines Schools, which is, I often tell people I made a heck of a lot more money selling beer and clam chowder than I'm ever going to by writing. On the other hand, I make what living I do make now as a writer in one way or another, and that's much more satisfying to me in some important ways than, you know, than strict income level ever was or could be.
Yeah, what I would think that a couple of things I've noticed about the marketing is that the authors often, to me, I always feel like they don't believe me when I say you really, 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 really need to enjoy the writing process and enjoy that and get immersed in it.
Absolutely.
And don't be so in a hurry to get out there to start selling it. And from my point of view, I know that it's frustrating for authors because they feel like they're submitting their books and then you hear publishers saying, we're looking for books. And so they think, well, why won't they take mine? But it all has to do with what we're talking about. Yeah, for me especially, I absolutely, positively would never pick an author that I didn't know was going to go out and be really enthusiastic about their book. And so it's kind of a double choice. You have the really good books that you get. And then amongst those, you have to decide which one of those authors actually have that extra level of enthusiasm for what they're going to do. And then, you know, I practically have the first 600 or 700 sales mapped out before we even consider signing that book. I mean, I'll always say you can give grandma a free copy, but after that, it's pretty much done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not into the free book giveaways and stuff like that. I don't see the race to freedom. I mean, the race to free as being that great. And so there's a lot of things that go into that. And yeah, I also feel like just sort of an author dream enabler because I don't have enough time to figure out where in the world I would market all their books. So they give me the ideas like, who do you know and what have you done and what do you like? And then I'll try and make that become possible for them.
Charity?
Yes.
This is Mike. I want to maybe clarify something I said earlier. I just don't imagine myself a very effective marketer or promoter. But having said that, I never turn down opportunities to go anywhere and talk with anyone about something I've written if they flatter me with an invitation or an opportunity to do that. My current book, my first novel, Versus the Demons, I really do believe. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not very practiced or good yet at creating those opportunities for myself. Versus the Demons is a novel of historical fiction that I really do believe in, and I believe it has legs that it hasn't shown yet, particularly in this area, because the jumping off point for it is the first night game in the history of pro baseball, which I discovered as a baseball fan fairly recently. I couldn't understand why I didn't know of it sooner, but it actually happened in Des Moines on May 2nd, 1930. And that's the jumping off point for my story about a boy who's born in the east on the east side of Des Moines in the midst of that game and grows up to be a Bush League ball player. It's set in a baseball context, but it's not about baseball, and it weaves into the stories of some famous Iowans from the past, like Billy Sunday and Henry Wallace. As Steve mentioned, I've discovered that I enjoy the process of writing in ways that I hadn't imagined. Henry Wallace was not even on my radar when I started writing Versus the Demons, and he became a big part of it.
Well, we have just a few minutes left, and I want to get each of you to tell me a little bit about what you think your place in publishing and in Iowa means. Jim, here you are at the University of Iowa. The University of Iowa Press does publish a number of historical books about Iowa, a number of, a whole lot of actual guides about flora and fauna in the state of Iowa. What can you do for Iowan authors and for the state of Iowa that you couldn't do as another publishing company?
Well, I think I don't quite know the answer to that. I don't think other publishing companies, present company excluded, really because of Iowa's relatively sparse population, we're going to be an underserved community. Essentially, more and more value means money for publishing. And commercial publishers just don't see the value in Iowa. So you mentioned flora and fauna. We've pretty much built the corpus of knowledge about that. And it's an active thing. I mean, we've added to arguments of conservation on things like the Les Hills and flood management, and now we're moving into issues of locavore and organic food. We are the foremost publisher on prairie restoration. We're also tackling topics that really affect everyday Iowans. We've got books in the works on the same-sex marriage decision in Iowa and how that influenced the rest of the nation. Transcendental meditation in Fairfield and where that's headed. Assimilation in Iowa, an Indian woman who settled in the Midwest with her family back in the 60s and her journey to become a Midwesterner. We do publish a lot of Iowa-based authors, and that's a byproduct of Iowa-based subjects. It's not something we seek out, but a lot of our authors are from Iowa, and not just those writing history or nature, but also on the literary side. And if you view the university, as I do, as having a major cultural impact on the state of Iowa, we have partnerships with the University of Iowa Art Museum now, the Iowa's Writers Workshop, as well as Cedar Rapids Museum of Art and Prairie Lights Distribution. So we're working with all of these partners to really bring out the culture of Iowa.
And we have just a minute left. Steve, what do you think your special role is at Ice Cube Press?
Well, quickly, at the very most basic level, it's that I feel like if we're doing stories about where we live, we're honoring the place where we live. And I know so many times – and to me, when I think of that, I always think of parents raising their children to go somewhere else, or they sort of look over the stories that they have of where they live. And so to me, that's always a sad thing, because I think the lives of the parents and the people that have lived here are totally heroic lives that deserve to be shared and to prove that. And I also feel, just as a small publisher, that I'm definitely not, you know, the smartest person alive, but I have proved that you can make a living here in Iowa. And I sort of feel like I'm showing off. But on the other hand, if you really work at it, you can. And so it's not an impossible thing when your parents say you'll never make money at it. Well, that's actually not true for me. And so I think that's a valuable lesson to pass on.
All right. Well, and we are out of time today. Steve Semkin, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Steve Semkin is the owner and operator of Ice Cube Press, based in North Liberty. Jim McCoy is the director of University of Iowa Press. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
And Mike Wellman, thank you.
Charity, thank you. It's my pleasure. Opportunities like this are helpful to authors like me. I'm very grateful.
Michael Wellman lives in Des Moines. He has self-published 3 books. His most recent is a novel called Versus the Demons. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble in Des Moines. And we're going to talk more books today at noon on River to River with Ben Kiefer.
Hi, Charity. Put that in the singular. One book, one fascinating book from the University of Iowa Press. I'm going to be talking with its author, Peter Kaufman. And this is the story of a murder in 1897. And a manhunt that took the pursuer, a detective, up into Alaska during the gold rush to bring this man back to Iowa, where he landed at the Anamosa Penitentiary. It's a fascinating read, and coming up at noon, a fascinating conversation, a murder mystery for real life.
Perfect way to spend your Halloween noon hour.
Absolutely.
Right? River to River today at noon. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.